My name is Becky Almanza, and Joe is my husband. And we've been doing basically community ministry for about 30 years. When I say community, Joe is currently working for the Highland Church as their as a chaplain in the county jail right now, and he goes into the prison. And then I'm also working right now as their food pantry coordinator, and I also work with the Netherlands. So we work with a lot of disenfranchised, low-income, and neighbors. And right now, Joe also coordinates the little neighborhood church, which is one of the satellite churches from off of Highland, called Freedom Fellowship. And we feed every Wednesday night for a meal for about 60 to 80 people. And often the ones that walk into the door are homeless, low income. And so these are our neighbors that live around the neighborhood. And also they come in, we bus a lot of them in. One of the unique things about Freedom is that it doesn't, there's no set leader, even though Joe coordinates everything. It's a team approach. And so we have different people, and a lot of them are the very neighbors that come in to eat on Wednesday nights. And afterwards, we have a Bible study and classes for children and young adults. And so the unique thing is that it's a team approach. And so if you are the cook, then we empower the cook to do what she needs to do to be to do that. And we have a couple of ministers, elders, that kind of one administrates and one does strictly prayer. And so that's just it just seems to work. The basic theme of Freedom is where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. So that really is taken literally by a lot of the people that come and worship. We just, I don't know how else to describe it. Anyway, on so this is at Freedom on Wednesday nights and every third Saturday. We do not have a Sunday worship. And what we do is we try to build a bridge from the Freedom campus onto the Highland campus. And so on Sunday mornings, we have a Bible class that Joe teaches. And there's a couple classes now. We started out with one, and now there's two, where it's kind of like an introduction into the church world. A lot of the neighbors and friends that come to Freedom are have been on a journey, ex-offenders, just low income, and so a lot of it is the church culture is new to them. And so part of what Joe's going to share with us today is how we help them make a transition into something that they don't know about, because they either spent their childhood in abusive situations and ended up in prison or jail. And then at the same time, we have some that grew up in the church but are very disenchanted with what has happened in their life because of the circumstances they come from. So I'll turn it over to Joe.
Okay. Thank you, Becky. It's wonderful to work with my wife, Becky, because, you know, we're described as generals. She is the peace general, which structures the ministries, and I'm kind of the war general. I'm kind of the visionary who, you know, visualizes what needs to be done. Now, last year, let me see here, we were down at the bottom in. I lost all power to my PowerPoint presentation, so Mike asked me to come back and redo that, so we're going to make an attempt. to do that. First, I got to give this iPad a Tylenol to put it to sleep so they won't keep turning off and on. So bear with me here in a moment. There we go.
So is your church mainly made up of people who have been coming from the jail, or is it like a combination of? Sorry, you were playing.
It's a combination. We have volunteers that come in that are Highland members, and a lot of low income ex-offenders that come out, just got out, that visit us, and. Our main thing is we try to build a relationship, and if you can get the relationship built, then that's a lot of it.
Yeah. This picture that you see there on the, this is our Freedom Fellowship church. This is a church planting in Abilene, Texas, and most of these neighbors that you see, you know, up on the screen. Have recently put on Christ in baptism. Many are homeless. Many are addicted. Many have recently been released from prison. Many come from abusive backgrounds. Many of them are scared. A lot of them, you know, deal with a lot of the misplaced shame. I don't know if you were last year at Chris Stingman's class on Beyond Shame. They deal with a lot of that shame. They're very suicidal. Just this morning I got a call that Michelle, who I prayed with last Wednesday night in Bible class, she said, "I think I'm going to make it," and got a call this morning that they don't know if she committed suicide or she died. She's made many attempts to try to, you know, get rid of those demons, but I guess, you know, we don't know all the details. But I'm kind of saddened because, you know, they think she took her life. Anyway, they can barely read, but it's amazing that they know their Bible. You know, they know Scripture. We have one guy that, you know, sits up in the front, and you know the speakers always dread him being up there because he finishes up their sermon before they're able to, you know, teach what they want to, because he knows a lot of Scripture. And his name is David, and so he's a real great guy to listen, because he has a lot of insight on Scripture. You know, they teach us a lot. You know, a lot of times, you know, we think we go in there to teach them, and it's kind of a teacher relationship with them. They teach us a lot of wisdom that just because people can't read, it's amazing how much common sense they have. And way before we even got here to establish this church that was given to us, because it just narrowed it down to two members. Who the preacher died, and he just had one member. And Arlene gave us the building, and so we just turned it back over to the neighborhood, because it's in the high crime, drug. You know, kids are addicted to crack cocaine and all kinds of other drugs. You know, at the ages of 6 years old, 8 years old, 7 years old, and so you know. We have them. We have all the people that live there. Just because they're poor, they have some kind of wisdom, you know, neighborhood wisdom that they share with people. The elders at the Highland Church, where, you know, we facilitate, we work, have empowered us to restore Abilene. And what they mean by restore Abilene is to show the people in that neighborhood, when they come to Freedom, we want to welcome them. And even though that's a small thing to welcome them, we do it with hospitality, because we believe that hospitality is God's mission in the restoration of all things. And so that's kind of our model. And through the hospitality, we also do a lot of shalom. You know, the word shalom, you know, I remember way back when Wes took me to New York City. I had never been to New York City. I went to New York City, and there was a lot of, I had a culture shock because, you know, two things that stand out were people walking around with signs that said Jews for Christ. And at the time, I didn't know what that meant because I hadn't gone to seminary. And then they had these people dressed in black with a little funny hat, and they would say, you know, shalom, you know, to each other. And then the other one would say shalom. And I asked my friend, you know, Wes, I said, what are they saying to each other? He said, what language are they speaking? He said, they're Jews. And they're saying, they're saluting each other. They'll say shalom, and then they pause for 5 seconds, and then the other one will say shalom, and he'll pause for 5 seconds. And what they're waiting to hear from one another is that when they say shalom, they're saying, is there anything missing? Is there anything lacking? Is there anything broken in your life? And I thought about that, and I said, you know, that sounds a lot like Jesus. When Jesus came, you know, to dwell among us, he came with shalom. And if there was anything broken, lacking, or missing, that Jew would make sure that the other Jew would get what was lacking and what was missing and what was broken. They would try to fix the problem among each other. And that's what we try to do at Freedom Fellowship. You know, we practice the shalom. We welcome all people because in welcoming them, we realize that Jesus first welcomed us, and he showed us hospitality when he fed our souls in our time of need. When we were separated, we were excluded, we felt like strangers without God, without hope in our lives. And so we welcome people in the name of Jesus in that neighborhood. And then we also make disciples. That's one of our visions, to make disciples of the people that we baptize. And then we ask him to come and see, you know, what we want people to see is how Jesus has changed us. And so we are what we are because of what Jesus had done for us. And that's a lot of times that's, you know, that's he has transformed us. And so, you know, like the scripture says, you know, if you see me, you see the Father. For me and the Father, you know, are one. So we want them to see that we're united. And then most of the people that you see up here, these neighbors, they are people that walk to the church. They live there. They don't have cars. You know, they're not commuters like me. I live on the other side of town, so I just come there to do the service. But there's now actually people that have moved into that neighborhood and live among them because people that are commuters and come and go, they're not really invested in relationships with people. And in order for you to help, you know, these people, you have to live where they live to be able to know how to develop these healthy relationships with them and to see their problems. And I tell you, it's a challenge. And so we call it the neighborhood church. That's what it is. What we do there is we cook. You know, most of these people are poor. And so sometimes they don't have anything to eat at home. And so we get a lot of food from Olive Garden. We get a lot of food from Chipotle. We get a lot of food, you know, from Chick-fil-A. And all that food that we get, that's what we use on Wednesday night, you know, to cook the food, to let them come and they can eat, you know, that good food. And there's really nothing wrong, you know, with that food. And so we cook for them. Also, we also bury them. I can't tell you how many times being, you know, by their bed, dying, because before we met them, they had a lot of chronic disease. You know, I sometimes think God sent them our way so that we could die with them, so that we could be at their bed. We don't say anything. We're just there. We just hold their feet and touch them. And for the first time in their life, they don't have to die alone, because if somehow we were not there, nobody would know them. Sometimes we do funeral, we can't even find their family. They have no family, and so they die without anybody there except us, the church, Freedom Fellowship. We also do a lot of anointing, healing. Now, that right there, you know, when they first come in, we set two chairs up. And we ask them, okay, you came to church because you have something that you need for us to pray for. And, you know, you read about demons in the Bible. But if you really want to see demons live, you go to these neighborhoods and you get to see them. You just won't read them in the book of Mark. I mean, you'll actually see that evil pop up his ugly face and do some very terrible things because he doesn't want us to be there, you know, at that location. So because we cook, because we bury people, because we heal people, that a lot of times is one way that we draw people, you know, to Jesus Christ. They pray a lot. And the thing that's so amazing is when they pray, they actually believe that God is actually going to do something miraculous. You know, and that's also very unique, and that draws them, you know, to Jesus Christ. It's very messy. Neighborhoods come to freedom, all broken, messy sinners. And it can be challenging at times, like last Wednesday. You know, we have these middle class, we have these middle-aged kids that come to Freedom Fellowship, have no structure, no behavior. And at first it was real nice for them to say, well, just go on over there and play basketball with them, and then invite them to church. But then when they come to church, boy, they just tearing up everything and doing all kinds of bad things, you know, at the church. When the teachers are teaching, they're banging on the window. So last week we had to finally tell all those boys that they had to go home. Bring your mother when you come next time so she can see how you behave. So I went there this Wednesday, so the elders called me. They said, where are you? I said, I'm in California. He said, how long are you going to be up there? I said, I'll be up there for 5-6 days. He said, oh, man, we're going to be all alone here with all these kids. But we've been there before with kids, you know, that behave that way. And I can tell you the 13 years that we've been at that church, those kids that started off like those kids have gone to college, gotten their degree, they're doing productive things. They're not in trouble with the law. They're not in gangs anymore. But some things just take a long time to happen. It doesn't happen overnight because we're in this for the long haul. There's no shortcuts about it. One of the things that blows them away, though, is they have never felt love and accepted, especially by their family and their friends, even by society as a whole. But when they see, you know, the love and acceptance from us, that just blows them away. Just the other day, Becky drives around with four women, you know, from the neighborhood. And they've probably never been in a brand new car, you know, with their condition. And she takes them over to Blue Sky to have a hamburger. And no one's ever done things like that for them. And just the little things that people do for them make great impacts. It's a small church. But man, it has a great impact because everybody in town knows that Freedom Fellowship is a church that helps homeless people and hungry people, and baptism. This year we baptized over 300 people, you know, just baptizing people because they, you know, and that's, you know, we don't have a map or a program for it. We just show up and trust God, and people just show up, and. It's just amazing. Sometimes people are just passing through. Freedom is known for people that are not in it for the long haul. As a matter of fact, we understand that, and that's okay with us because Freedom welcomes people. Freedom reminds me of a great story of a Methodist preacher back in the Great Depression, where he was riding on a train and he looked out the window and he saw a white flag, and on that white flag it said, "We feed at this town." And then all of a sudden he saw all those people jump off the train. Sometimes when people come to Abilene, this is what they say, that Abilene, Texas is a rehab city. They have so many people in that city practicing the Matthew 25 passage, where they help people with clothes, and I mean, they have ministries. One day, at Becky's office, she was standing there, and she tells me the story. She said she overheard these two guys, because we have a piece of paper that we put out every week that shows all the places that are hiring in the city of Abilene. It comes out every week. And so she gives them one of those handouts, and they say, work. He said, man, I'm not going to work. Why work when all these churches are giving all this free stuff? And it's true. You don't have to work. They have so many ministries there in Abilene that sometimes people can just not do anything and live off what churches are giving, you know. And of course, you know, we also give people and we welcome people, but we also teach people how to be responsible, you know. We train our volunteers to go through seminars, like when Helping Hurts, Toxic Charity, Going Beyond Charity, because the story of the chickmunks up in Colorado, they have a sign that says, please do not feed the chickmunks, because the tourists are only there for a short time. In the wintertime, those little chickmunks begin to depend on those tourists, and they're not there to feed them, and so they die. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that we teach them responsibility, we train them, and we have all the ministries to do that for the people. But we know that they're not in it for the long haul. Freedom Fellowship is known for caring for the poor, for the homeless, in a way that most churches do not. Abilene has two mega churches. Highland is one of them, and then the Beltway Church is another. But the thing that makes us so distinctive, you know, is our hospitable approach, you know, to welcoming people, you know, in the name of Jesus Christ. And if you would like to, learn more about that, Richard Beck, one of the professors at Abilene, wrote a book for us called A Strange Guy, Meeting Jesus in Disguise. And this is the story of this church. And all the stories that I just mentioned, we are in there of dying with people. And really, this is some deep theology, but really the reason why we minister to these people, we don't minister to people with the attitude that we go in and plan the church and says, we're here because we have the power and we have the money and we're here to change you. That's not the mm-hmm. attitude that we have when we go in. It's not the attitude that says, you have something that I want so that I can meet my goal. That says something about that attitude, that you really don't want to have a relationship with them. You just have a goal that you have to meet. And they're going to help you to meet that goal. That's not the type of people that we have at this church. We don't have the experts here or the innovators, because when they get famous, they leave this people behind, because they go out traveling all over the country and then forget about the work. You know, because they're only in it for notoriety or for meeting their goals or whatever that might be. You know, it's a non-relational approach for them. They don't, they're not interested in that, okay? Let me, and I told you about the book, if you want to get the book and read a little bit more about it. Now I want to shift into something, because I have a lot of material and very little time. This is a book that Richard Beck wrote. And so he partnership with us. He teaches there at the Freedom Fellowship. But one of the things that I read from somebody that was speaking, they said that in the past 50 years, that a lot of smart people, well resourceful people, you know, some of you no doubt, have been trying to figure out how to reduce poverty in America. People have created and invested millions of dollars in nonprofit organizations to help people who are poor. They have created committees, study groups, issues on education and job development. And they have written books and columns, and they have given great speeches. And yet, people are still in the trenches with low income. And even though it has helped some, it's not always enough. And so our poverty rates have not changed in the past 50 years since we had the war on poverty when that was launched. But here's something I want to share with you that I feel that we have overlooked. The most powerful and practical resources for the people that we work with at Freedom Fellowship. That people who are poor have assets. They are creative. They're innovators. They're smart. But just looking at the outward condition of a poor person, you couldn't tell the full story of who poor people really are. And here's some principles that we use to help people transition out of poverty. One is helping them to develop healthy relationships. They have relationships, but they're not healthy. And what we do, we feel that we have noticed, me and Becky have, that before you can help a person transition out of poverty, that you must develop an organic system of trust and support. And that begins by listening to the neighbors to what their needs really are. You know, from there you can help them and give them what they need the most. And what do they need the most is encouragement, emotional support, and feedback. That's what they need. And so when you give a person encouragement, you give them something great that you can help our neighbors, lift them up with words of encouragement. It makes them feel worthy and not discouraged. And it's amazing what a fresh boost of fresh inspiration can do to perform miracles in some of the people that we work. And I believe the best way to help our neighbors is to help them to discover also what their skills and what their talents are. Now I want to shift over to what healthy relationships do for people. And I'm going to shift. Here's our success stories. And I wish I had the time to give you all the detail, but we're limited to time, so get the book and some of those concepts are in there. But here are some people that I think about this girl. You know, we met her in her broken 1994 or 19. What is it? Was it 94? What's when the Pintos came out?
You got 64 Pintos.
It was back in the days when the Pintos were very popular, and she had one, and she was sleeping in that car with her two children. And she couldn't move anywhere because she needed a water hose. She had no water in the radiator, but they were living out of the car. And so I went over there and I said, okay, I can put that, you know, water pipe or water hose, and then we'll put some Freon, we'll put some water in, and we'll get your car running. That's all they needed. Well, something as simple as that, the radical generosity, she said, where do you go to church? And so we go to Freedom. And so she comes to Freedom, and then she joins us as we're learning the ways of Jesus Christ. Well, because of the relationships, this was almost 13 years ago, because of the relationships that she has with us, and they're healthy, and she's surrounded by a great, you know, the scriptures say in Proverbs that with many counselors, victory is assured. This is where we get the concept of helping people increase their circle of influence, right? And what better place than the church? It has a lot of people that want to love our neighbors. Not a lot of people are afraid of our neighbors. Now, our church launches out to accept people from all kinds of people. Doesn't matter who they are. You know, we want to be hospitable to them. Well, after all these years, you know, she was homeless. Now she is the food coordinator at Freedom Fellowship. And now we planted another church on the other side of town, Grace Fellowship. Well, Highland is now going to pay her part-time to be the food coordinator for those two churches. She's actually going to get paid. She's been doing this for free. And she loves to do it because she was homeless before. And an opportunity came up, You know, but the only problem with poor people, and that's even true of me, my wife can tell you, we have the tendency of accumulating so much because we think we're going to run out. And so she goes to the food bank and she gets all the food that she can get. And she has those freezers just full of food. So we have to tell her we don't need that much. It's already a day old, you know, food that we get from the bank. We don't need to store it and freeze it because it's already old. We'll get some new one every week. So, but she does a great job. And the beautiful thing about her is that she now has her own people that she is recruiting. And she has helpers. And they all cook a catered meal. The homeless come to there. They haven't had a good warm meal in I don't know how long. And that draws people, you know, to freedom. And it's just a beautiful thing. Yeah. This guy right here, I met almost 24 years ago. Didn't have a relationship. We help him increase his circle of influence. We believe that healthy relationships are important. This man right here walked all the way from Mississippi because God told him that he was going to become a preacher. And so he walks all the way from Mississippi to Dallas, and right off the freeway, our church, back in those days when I was in the Metroplex, our church was right off the freeway. So he sees a sign, Church of Christ, so he decides to walk over there. Well, they gave him at the office. Alan Brown gave him my address. So he is on the doorsteps of my house ringing the doorbell. And we were just about to sit down to eat. And I opened the door and I said, "Can I help you?" He said, "Are you Joel Manza?" Yes. Well, they sent me from the church. God sent me down here to become a preacher. From where? He's from Mississippi. And I said, "Well, man, you must be hungry." So Becky is the greatest. You want some good food, Becky can make it. She's a good cook. I can't tell how many people are baptized because of her cooking. And so he came in, we sat down, and we befriended him. He said he was a mechanic, got him a job at Western Auto. Remember the Western Autos? And then he couldn't work because he didn't even have black shoes. So, man, I just took off my shoes. I said, "Man, I got some black shoes here. Go ahead and take my shoes." And I gave them to him, got hired. He also became a minister, went through Sunset School of Preaching, graduated, and now he has a 250 church that was meeting in Oak Cliff in Dallas. Now they're over in Coppell. He's got his own office. When he decided to become a full-time minister, his wife left him. Then he had a stroke. And then his wife came back. They got back together. So, you know, he's preaching a full-time. And all it was friendship. All it was somebody to adopt him and to increase his circle of influence, be healthy. And I guess I told you about this girl the last time we were here. Heroin addict, Rosaria, who went through one of our programs, been a heroin addict for years, and she went to work for Rentec, Jack Rentec, who is running for office there in Abilene, the city council, and he hired her. And when they were wanting to beautify the, you know, before when you went to Abilene, and you would come to Abilene, Business 20, the first ugly thing that you would see was a wrecking yard with all this metal. You remember back in the day, must have some of y'all that been in Abilene? Okay, now they got the Texas Frontier, but when they were looking to beautify that, they were wanting to put these buffaloes on these poles. Guess who they asked to do that? The heroin addict.
Those are really cool, too.
Yeah. And so Rosaria, now when she passes through there, now the little girls have made a paradigm shift, because when they see their mother, they don't see the heroin addict. They see that she met you. Those are mama. They say that those are mama's buffaloes, you know, and all because of, you know, forming community with people, loving them, validating them, increasing their circle of influence, and the rest just happens. You know, people want to be generous. You want to be generous. You want to help people. You have resources other people don't have, and you want to share those with people. You may not be able to lead them to Christ. You might not know how to study with them, but if you can just befriend them and have relationship with them. You know, it's a teacher, right? And they'll teach you and you teach them. This guy right here, hitman in the Mexican mafia. Next time you're traveling from Fort Worth going to Dallas, right before you pass Beltline at the Lone Star Racetrack, just look over there to the right on the south side. And you see this beautiful, what they call a wave. This man wanted to get, he got out of the Mexican mafia, but they wouldn't hire him because he had an aggravated assault. And so most companies nowadays, if you have an aggravated assault, the insurance can't cover you at that company. Even though the employer said, man, I love the way you work, I want to have you here as an employee, but I can't hire you because I have to insure you by law. And the law now says you can't hire anything with aggravated assault. So he did this work for the city. And after they did this work for the city, they fired him because they found out he had been in prison, had an aggravated assault. Okay, this is what's so sad, because sometimes the system only works for certain people. I mean, it's the way that America is set up. It only works for certain people. It doesn't work for Pedro, you know, because he's brown, he's a Hispanic, right? But because Pedro increased his circle of influence, the same guy that helped me to get out of the Mexican mafia, Billy Clark, adopted my brother, who was in the Mexican mafia at the time. He got out. And because Billy Clark knows people, right? This is the sad thing about it. They say, we can't hire him, Billy, but we need to hire him. He wants to do good. This caused national attention. They made a film about this. They're using my brother to show this film of this way that inmates have skills when they get out, and you can help them because, you know, you just put them in prison, throw away the key. That's not the answer. So they took him. And they met one of the pro mayors, the pro tent mayors of Grand Prairie. And so what they did with his application, they took it all the way to the top. And so he goes for the interview. Now, he could have never got to the top if he didn't have this great circle of influence, or he had people, relationship with people. And the person at the top says to my brother, I don't know how this application made it up this far, because I never get those applications this far. And I'm sorry that you had to come up here to my office to want to work for the city, but I can't do it. But what impresses me the most is how you got the people to get this application up here. That tells me that you got people that care for you. And because that impressed me the most, I'm going to hire you and I'm going to give you a chance. So, man, they hired him, you know, making $14 an hour working for the city. And, man, he just was so happy, you know, just. And then all of a sudden, you know, he gets struck by cancer. You know, he's got cancer in his lungs, in his liver, in his back. You know, he's not doing very well, because when we meet our neighbors, they have chronic disease for years of abuse in their body. So remember how I told you sometimes we cook for them, we die with them. And but all this I just described to you, you would think that I just do this because, you know, I want to be doing ministry. But you know why I do it? Because in helping with all those people, I just showed you all the pictures. This is what I'm addicted to. When I do that and help people, you know what I'm really after? I'm just really after being in the presence of Jesus. Not so much that I'm feeding people or giving people money or doing this kind of ministry. That's not why I do that. I do it because I'm addicted to feel the presence of Jesus among these people. That's where I get off. That's why I do this ministry. That's why I help people, ugly people, bad people, because when you get near them, Jesus gets near you, right there with you. And that's pretty amazing. And then this little boy, you know, I told you about those little boys that came to the church last week, trying to destroy everything, being unruly and all. Well, we've been there before with this guy. This is Romeo. Now, Romeo was scheduled to be in the Bloods, they were grooming him to become a member of the gang, the Bloods. There's the Crips, and then there's the Bloods. And so when we met Romeo, he was addicted to crack cocaine, along not only with him, but also with Rob, and also with Heathen, and other little boys. And again, another example of helping people increase their circle of influence. That you can change people's life by introducing them to have healthy relationships with other people. We overlook that. We throw money into nonprofits. We throw money into ideas. We write books. But no one wants to invest in having relationships with people from prison, ex-offenders, prostitutes, whatever, homeless people, poor people, smelly people. They don't want to have relationships with them because they know it's tiring. And they're not in it for the long haul. They want something to happen now. And this is after years. Well, he gave up his red handkerchief. We don't have a picture of it, but when he was baptized with his red handkerchief. That's the handkerchief for the Bloods. Mm-hmm. And Zack Snyder is one of the radical youth ministers I had at that time. And he actually was so touched by this young boy that he adopted this boy as his biological son. And when he adopted him and he made him feel validated, he made him feel important, he made him feel, you know, he affirmed him, he accepted him, he approved of him. It's amazing what things happen, how people change when you do those things. And so he put him in Abilene Christian School. The year that he was there, he was the best running back. He took Abilene Christian to the state champions. They won the championship and they gave him a ring. I mean, he was so proud. He also joined the Boy Scouts and got his eagle, the highest ranking. I don't know anything about Boy Scouts, but you guys know what. And he was honored with he got, what do they call that? Eagles?
Eagle Scout.
Yeah. And boy, he just and now here he had a congratulations for winning the state championship. Just got married, he works for one of our elders, Terry St. Pierre, at his muffler shop, doing really good. Now, they're not where they need to be, but they're not where they used to be. And this is for the long haul. This is not, you know, the short haul. Here's another amazing thing that's happening. You know, after years, James, of doing all those crusades with Wes going in, they now have a seminary inside the Texas prisons. And they train men in prison to become ministers. They actually get their degree, you know, in the biblical studies. You know, Dan Patrick, which was used to be the on the board of criminal justice, became the lieutenant governor, and one of the senators, Whitmire.
Royce Hunter with that?
Yeah.
He's the prick.
Exactly. Friend. And so they have a preaching school in there, and so they train them, you know, to become ministers, but then they said, but what do you do with them after that you train them? Well, Dan Patrick, the lieutenant governor, said, let's send the graduates to the 7 worst maximum security prisons in the state of Texas, and let's call them prison apostles. And James, me and Dale were at the B-201 unit that Sunday. You know, we were at Eastern Hills Church of Christ, and you know how a service is there, right? quiet, you know, everybody just, you know. But man, when we went that day, they had these missionary prison apostles who they're sent to prison, and the chaplain can't micromanage what they want to do. They've already been commissioned. They go in and they set up the whole service. So I come in and they move my pulpit where it usually is on that cross, and they got a 40-man choir. And they have a live band. They have 8 song leaders. They have these, what they call leaders, they wear white gloves. They're considered like elders, but they can't be elders, but they're leaders. And they pray for the inmates before they start the service. I mean, to tell you, man, it was jumping. I mean, you ever heard of a 40-man choir? I mean, it's amazing, powerful. And Dale turns to me and said, man, a whole lot of difference than this morning, right? I said, man, this is going. Man, I tell you, when you have that kind of music and that kind of background, that choir, it's easy for you to preach. Man, I preached, man, I was, that Holy Spirit got a hold of me, I was preaching. And we had like 30 baptisms and that altar call, you know, because, and so even people are recognizing that people have assets. That people are smart, that people are innovators, but the system is broken because the system does not work for blacks or Hispanic. It only works for white people. That's a fact. That's not to say something bad about you. That's the reality of it. And now in prisons, these guys who are in prison, when they get out, they come to our churches, which are really dead. There's no live in it. But just sitting like what these preachers have been preaching at night, right? And they are ready to, but you know what I do? I take them over to freedom. I got a guy that went to the, Ben Thompson. Man, we baptizing people all the time. Those 300 people that we baptized because of him. And he, man, sometimes we baptize 5 at a time, 12 at a time, And the good thing with the church is that whatever is celebrated is always repeated. Members have children that want to be baptized. So, man, we baptized 300 people this year. And boy, it's exciting because, you know, we got even to the point now where we're not baptizing no people. Hey, there's something wrong here, you know, because God is active. And that Ben Thompson is just amazing. The guy can't even hardly read. Been in Angolia, you know, for 20, 27, 29 years, you know. Gets out. Even that's a miracle. Went to go work for the governor in Louisiana. The governor in Louisiana, you know, kind of pardoned him. He had a life sentence. Came out, came to us. When he came over to us, he was all scared. And one of the things that happens when we acclimate, you know, the people from the neighborhood into a church, 3 things always happen when they come. I have a class I teach on Sunday morning, and because we want them to be integrated into the community of faith body at Highland. But guess what always happens with people when they come from the Freedom Church, and now we build that bridge like Becky talked about, and they come now to Freedom. The first thing that they experience when they come over there is what I call culture shock. They are afraid. And we always tell them, look, if you're going to succeed, like the pictures I show you, the people that succeeded, you're going to have to increase, right? Your circle of influence. We always say you need to introduce yourself to 10 healthy relationships. That's what we teach. It's a class that we call reentry. Okay? And they said, man, I don't know if I can. They're afraid, you know, they're scared. And they come to church. And we don't tell them to sit back in the back because, you know, they're always tell them, oh, those are Joe's people. We tell them to go and spread all over. Because if you can get 10 healthy relationships, you're going to make it. Right there and then, they get scared. They say, man, I don't know if I can do that. And we always talk about Ecclesiastes, 4, 9, 10. 2 is better than 1. For one falls down, the other one picks them up. But pity the person that has no one to pick them up when they fall. And we tell them, this is what's going to help you to stay healthy. But you know what they face? The one thing that's going to, I don't want to exaggerate, but tell me if this is true. Now I'm taking my own experience, because when I came to church, how long do you think it took me to acclimate and assemble and adjust to that new body of new identity, a new person, a new family? When I met my wife and I started going to church, and she would introduce me to all these people, and as soon as she got lost through all the people, I would actually do this and find the door and get out the door and go sit in my car and wait for Becky until church was over. And she would come out there and say, what are you doing out here? I said, man, I don't know. I'm shocked. I can't be, with all these people. And you know what it was, really? It was really that I didn't know how to trust people. Because everybody I've ever trusted had abandoned me, abused me, lied to me. And now here I'm going to come to the church, to meet all these people and to develop these healthy relationships. But I don't know how to trust people. And that's a problem. That's one thing that's going to keep you from doing this with your new family now, your community of faith family. And so we teach them that they have to learn how to trust again, right? Now, we tell them, you might get hurt again because people are human, right? But this is what's going to keep you from developing this. The other one is, being sociable. Because subconsciously, they fear that if you find out who they really are, you're not going to accept them. And so they fear you finding out who they really are. And so they don't want to be around people. Yeah. That's why they go to prison. That's why they're always by themselves. And I always use an illustration to break the ice. I always tell them, have you ever gone to the encyclopedia and have you ever studied those birds? We hear them all the time when we're out in the garden. Some birds up in the air. What are they called? Geese. Mm-hmm. And they're whatever the noise they're making. And you look up and you see them, right? That V formation. And that they're going to warmer climate. They're going south because winter's coming. But one of the amazing things that's so amazing about these geese is that if you was to take a camera and zoom in on them when they're flying in that V formation, right there in their mouth, they carry a little twig. And the higher they fly and the more they stay together, the faster they go. And that little twig that they carry on their mouth is every now and then, because they travel for miles, long distance, one of them will get tired because they cross the ocean, and they drop that little twig on the water and they get on top of it, and that's how they float. And then when one of them goes out to the water, two of them will go right behind them. And they drop the little twig and they stay with that geese until he either regains his strength or he dies. And then they pick up the twig and they get back into the spiritual formation. And I tell them, these are just birds. We're people. If birds can do that, come on now. We can develop these relationships. And you need people And that's what the relationships are. This man right here, James, has been with me for since the time I got to prison. Him and Dell and Wes, and they're my advisors. They're that scripture that says he that has many counselors, victory is assured. And I have them as my circle. If I have a question about ministry, I go to them. I talk to them and say, hey, man, I don't understand this, you know, whatever the problem is. And I have a great circle. My circle has gotten to the point now where, you know, it has expanded, and I use this as an illustration to people. You ought to have something like this. Here's all my circle of influence. There is their phone numbers, where they work, their home number, their work number, and here's what they tell me. Call me before you go to jail. But you can call me if you go to jail, but call me before you get to jail, because I want to help you before you get there, to prevent from you going there. These are 40 names. And so if I'm doing life and I'm on this journey and I hit a snag or I hit a problem or something comes up, I can call these numbers. Not all these numbers are going to be busy. I'm going to get an open line, you see. And so this is what I tell them. This is what you need. And so the pictures that you saw of those people being successful is because they've increased their circle of influence, you see. And this is something very simple, but we make it very complex. You know, you have to understand that when you're developing this, that they're scared of you, and you're scared of them. And that's very biblical, because you remember in the Old Testament, the story of the grasshopper complex? That the Israelites would not go into the city and take the city, because the Israelites were afraid of the enemies. But if you went on the other side of the enemies, they were afraid of the Israelites because they have seen their God, you know, conquer all the wars. And so Joshua says, you know, they have the grasshopper complex. Neither one of them will make a move because they're afraid of each other. And that's where we're stuck, you see. And so when this is developed, oh, the other thing I was going to show you that's real hard for them is the relational part. Because they don't know what a healthy relationship looks like. Because they come from homes where their father's in prison, their siblings are in prison, everybody's in prison. They don't know what a healthy relationship looks like. And we tell them that they need to start developing this relationship with people, and that just scares them to death. I remember several years ago when they gave me a topic to preach on relationships. And I was looking for an illustration to preach on relationships, and I think the topic was that everybody needs a Nathan, and everybody needs a Barnabas in their life. Nathan, you remember Nathan when he confronted David about his sin? Everybody needs a Nathan to be accountable to somebody else. And everybody needs a Barnabas, encouragement, right? He encouraged John Mark when he wanted to go with Paul on his missionary tour. Okay, everybody needs a Nathan and everybody needs a Barnabas. So I was thinking of doing the lesson on that. And then I thought, one day I went to the cemetery, and I was at the cemetery paying respects to my father and mother and my brother. My brother had been killed by the Mexican Mafia on Super Bowl Sunday. So I'm standing at that cemetery, and I thought, man, this is so funny. Because my mother is buried, the San Fernando Cemetery, it's a 4-block radius. And on the other side, on General McMullen, there my mother is buried. My brother is buried over here on Commerce Street by the fence, just like my mother. My dad is buried over here by the fence on Couples Street. And as I stood there, it dawned on me That's the way they really lived in life. They were separated. They were divorced. My brother spent, I don't know, 35, 40 years incarcerated in prison. My mother was never with my father. My father was never around. He was always absent. And so to develop these healthy relationships was even a problem with me, because I don't know what they look like. Because it was never modeled to me what a healthy relationship looked like. And I thought, and you know, for the first time it just dawned on me that that's the way they actually really lived in real life. And they all were buried in borrowed plots. My mother with her mother. My brother, he was buried by somebody else's plot, and my father was too. And it just scares them to death because they don't know how to do this, because everything to them is broken. And it's a struggle. Sometimes this takes up to 15, 20 years to develop. Like these people that you see, they didn't happen overnight. They're successful because people, here's what we tell people. They say, how am I going to do this? This is what one of our elders told us to tell people. When you make a commitment to people, make sure you tell them this: I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying with you for life. And they said, really? Yes. Because everybody that's ever said that to them has lied to them, have abandoned them, have not kept their word, and that's why they have a hard time trusting people. It's not they don't want to go to church. It's not that the church is not spiritual, they don't see the need for it. It's that they don't know how to trust people. Because they think they're going to be hurt again, abused again. And they may, I tell them, you may be abused. But people are human. Anyway, any questions that you want to ask me? Now you know how to go evangelize without having to open the Bible and just develop a relationship with people. Right? Adopt somebody in your life. Make a commitment to say, you know, I'm going to adopt somebody and I'm going to stay with that person. And everything that I know, I'm just going to pour into that individual. Make a commitment. Ask God through the Holy Spirit to help you to find somebody that you can pour your life into that individual. Let me tell you something. Let me tell you about the power of one. Here's the thing that the mistake we make. We want to go win the whole world for Jesus. But like Andy Stanley said, reach one as you wish you could reach everyone. And the power of one, when people send missionaries to prison to save me, the power, I have done so much. Not bragging, I have done so much, you know, in ministry. Because one person invested in me. And if you invest in one person, that person can go out. Man, I can't tell you the preaching school I had. I started in Mexico. I've graduated, you know, 18 people with their biblical studies degree from Baxter Institute, satellite in the church from there to close to Mexico City. You know, I thought, man, the different church planning, I can't even begin to tell you the people, thousands, I mean, hundreds of thousands of people that have been saved. You know, and somebody just focused on me. The power of one. Just focus on one. And don't look all over the world like you want to save the whole world. Just look for that one individual and say, I'm going to pour everything I know in this individual. And let me tell you something. You have the privilege of being an advocate for people like us. Because they won't listen to us. But if you say, hey, hire my friend. I'll vouch for him. They'll hire that person. That's the way the system is. It's sad that it's that way, but that's the way it is. That's what Brother Dan McLaughlin was talking about last night. About bodies. You know, how do you go and look at bodies? You know, it's just a body? Is it a color? Or you go look at them and say, hey man, I'm going to pour my life into this individual. And I'm going to help him to get and to be successful. That's what you can do. It's that simple. But we make it so complex, you know. But some people, they can't do that because, you know, they just, They're prejudiced. They're racist. They don't want to reach out to anybody. They just want their kind. But you can make a difference by getting out of your box and investing in that individual and making sure that individual becomes successful. You can do that. You have that power. That's the reality of it. Because the system that I live in, it doesn't work for me. It only works for me because I know James, because I know Wes Witt, because I know Dale, because I know all my circle of influence. I'm only where I am today because somebody spoke up for me. I remember a long time ago, and I'm going to end with this story. When I first got hired as a minister, we went before the eldership. And so my friend Wes brought me in and said, so we're going to hire Joe Manza as our outreach minister. And one of the elders said, well, Wes, how much are we going to pay Joe Manza? And you could almost read between the words, right? Because I'm an inmate. I study people. I study body language. I study voices. He said, how much are we going to pay Joe Manza? And then he said one of the most incredible things that, man, made an eternal deposit on me that even to this day, I can never forget. He said, Bob, if Joe Manza was your nephew, how much would you pay him? He said, what? Joe Manza was your nephew. How much would you pay him? I'm going to leave it at that because you know the answer. And he said, that's what you're going to pay Joe Manza, because he's my son. And I was able to get a salary because he vouched for me. Because he used that word picture. And that changed Bob Brimmer. He changed his life. He said, you know what? You're right. You know. And see, that's the kind of stuff that I would have never even succeeded. Well, I would have because God. Right? But God uses people. And I am where I am today. I'm grateful. You know. Because of that. And so you go look for those kind of folks that need an advocate, that need a healthy relationship, and just be real and just adopt them and remember, you're in it for the long haul, no shortcuts. And then you'll see the beauty of that person. That's how we change people in society. Yeah. And that's what I think what Don was saying when he said, hey, look at people as bodies. You know, not gender, or races, or color, you know. And man, that sermon last night, boy, it changed me. Because, you know, prejudice and racism cuts both ways. It's among even Hispanic people, you know. I have Hispanic people that call me a coconut. I'm white on the inside, but I'm brown on the outside. And it has nothing to do with that. It's just I've been educated. I went to school. I educated myself, and that's what they're saying. That, you know, I think like a white. It has nothing to do with white, but that's their criticism, you know. But I'm grateful. I'm happy, and I'm grateful for your prayers. This year, I went through some treatment, got healed, and I don't have cancer or anything like that. I got healed from hepatitis C because I was a heroin addict. And I feel so happy. I feel so full. My color skin has come back. I got this new medicine now that can, you know, heal. And I got healed from my liver. And I feel great. I'm a free man in many, many ways. Any question? I know I went over. What time were we supposed to start? 4:50? I went over. Hey, I broke a record. I went over 7 minutes. Wow.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Thank you.